Well, good evening. It's good to be with you tonight. If you would, go ahead and take your New Testaments and turn to Matthew, the 10th chapter. If you have two markers or you have a thumb, then you might want to hold Ephesians 5 as well, because we're going to spend the bulk of our time in those two passages tonight, Matthew 10 and Ephesians 5. And I want to express my appreciation for the opportunity to be here. And I hope that the things that we talk about tonight will be beneficial for each and every person here. But I want to say that I want tonight to specifically address the young people in the congregation. And by young people, to me, I'm talking about people in their 30s or younger. Because I want to offer you a personal apology, an apology on my behalf, for handing you the world that we're handing you. You see, I feel like if I had done a better job in my youth and I had taken full of time that has been given me and had done a better job of preaching Jesus, then maybe the world might be a little bit better than it is today. Because a world that knows Jesus and trusts in Him doesn't see the problems that we're experiencing today. But we're handing you a pretty frightening world. We're handing you a world where communism has walked in the front door of this country and is setting up shop. We've handed you a world that is full of violence and hatred, where there are riots and looting and destruction in the name of social justice. We're handing you a world where people can't agree on things without resorting to name-calling and hatred and vitriol in the things that they have to say. We're handing you a world where you, sitting out there tonight, are considered closed-minded and bigoted because you cling to a book that's ancient and obviously not relative to our time and day. We're handing you a world where you've been brought up to think that you can't stand for anything because you might offend somebody in that. And that's terrible. And I feel bad about that for not having done a better job of utilizing the time that's been given me to make the world a better place, to proclaim the name of Jesus in this world. And I can't speak for anyone else, but that's my personal thoughts on the matter. And as I've watched the events unfold in this country in the last few years, I've started finding myself longing for Acts 2 and what we read in Acts 2 in the last few verses of it, where it says those Christians were gathered together with one in their households, and they ate with gladness and simplicity of heart. And they shared their belongings with one another. They saw to one another's needs. And in a world where the hatred in it has even permeated itself into the church, where we've seen the church divide, elderships at odds with one another, members at odds with one another, I find myself longing for that state that they found themselves in Acts 2, despite the difficulty in their world. You see, in Acts 2, and throughout the first century, their world wasn't unlike ours. Their world wasn't unlike ours. I mean, they had Romans that they had to deal with. Even within the Jewish realm, they had the Pharisees and there was a lot of pressure on them. And there was a lot of violence and animosity towards them for standing up for what they did. So we can sort of identify with them, but I long for what I read about their unity. And I've studied and I've prayed. And in all of that, I come back to one word, because I've been looking for something. What do we need to get through this? What do we need to get back to that point in time? And I, over and over and over, I come back to one word. And that word's faith. And so I've started even going back and not just accepting what I've always come to know about faith, But look at it all over again and try to understand it and maybe get a better grasp of it. Because faith is one of those things that we share. We talk about it a lot. But it's really hard to measure. I mean, you can't go out and ask somebody, you know, for a pound of faith. Just like you can't ask somebody for a yard of love. You know it's there. But really, what is it? What is faith? And we can turn to places like Hebrews 11:1 and look at the definition that the Hebrew writer gave us. And you can say that with me. You know, faith is what? It's the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, right? That's the definition we go to. And that's a great starting point, because when we don't really understand something, what do? Well, you flip over the dictionary and you find a definition of it, and that at least gives you a starting point for beginning to understand it and conceptualize it. And that's a good place, because it tells us some very important and valuable things about faith. We know that it's the substance, it's substantial. It's the substance of things hoped for. So there is some substance there, but it's the evidence of things not seen. So it's evidential as well. There's evidence for it. So it's substantial and it's evidence-based. But you notice in both of those bits of definition, both of those parts of definition, there's a component that's not tangible. It's the substance of things that are hoped for. They're not here. And it's evidence for things that aren't seen. And when you think about it, that really stands to reason. Because if you can look at it, there's no need for faith. I don't have to wonder about something that I can see. I don't need faith to know that there's a table sitting right down there, because there's a table sitting right down there. I can walk down there and touch it, and I can measure it, and I can put my hands on it and feel of it. It's there. But the things that faith relate to aren't tangible. They're not tactile. And in fact, if you go on and read the rest of Hebrews 11, and you see in that roll call of faith that those people that are talked about there are forward-looking. The things that the faith was granted to them for were things that were not yet played out. And in many cases would not be played out for hundreds of years, thousands of years. And so faith is forward-looking. And it relates to things that are intangible. And so when we read things like 2 Corinthians 5:7 that says we walk by faith and not by sight, we begin to piece this together. Faith relies on us to see, but not see with our eyes. We need to see with something up our eyes. And we know from 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 2 that it's not just a nice thing to have. That for a steward of God, faith is required. It's required. And so it's good for us to understand faith and to get a grasp around it as to what it is. And so rather than talk about what it is, I thought that what might be a good approach to this is to look and see what it looks like in action. And I thought, what better place to go than the instruction given by Jesus himself? And so if you would look with me in Matthew 10, because Jesus is sending out his apostles to do some work. And in this work, he's going to give them some instruction and some insight as to what they're going to face when they go out to do his work. And in this, he's painting a picture for us of what faith looks like. Because they had Jesus there, right? They have Jesus there, and they saw some pretty amazing things that he had done. But the reward that he's promising them is not yet played out, just like it is for us. The reward that's promised us is not yet played out. We can't touch that reward. Jesus told them, in my Father's house, there's many kingdoms. There's place for you there, but I haven't seen it. I can imagine it. We've got descriptions of it. We've got it painted in terms we can comprehend, because you know, we're familiar with things that we can see and we can touch. But we haven't experienced that yet. And so Jesus is sending them out with some instruction, and he's going to show them what's going to be required of them through their faith in order to be seen as pleasing to God. And so I want to talk through this a little bit this evening. So if you would look in Matthew 10, and Jesus is sending them out, beginning in verse 5, and he's sending them out, not to the Gentiles, not to the Samaritans, but just to Israel, to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And this is important because their mission had not yet expanded beyond that point. And as was the custom in their day, they were expected, Israelites were expected to receive their brethren in, welcome them in. But Jesus told them, look, I want you to go out there, and I don't want you to take a coat, I don't want you to take a money belt, I don't want you to take anything with no extra pair of shoes, nothing. I don't want you going out there given the presumption, grandiose scheme. I want you to go out there and show these people that you're a regular person. That you're just a regular person, and that what you have to deliver doesn't have to do with this life here. With the message that you're teaching doesn't have anything to do with making money or with getting a better job or with having a nice house or fine clothes. No, the message that you have, it has to do with something that's not tangible, that's not seen here. And he tells them something that's interesting. He says that when you go in verse 11, he says, when you go into a city or town, whatever city or town that is, inquire who's worthy and stay there till you go out. And when you go into a household, greet it. If the household's worthy, let your peace come upon it. Listen to what he says, though. But if it is not worthy, if the household that you come into is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And whoever will not receive you, nor hear your words, when you depart from that house or city, shake the dust from your feet. Now, I want you to understand what Jesus is saying to him there. I want you to go, and I want you to freely share the message that I have given you to share with them. It didn't cost you anything. You don't charge them for it. You go in there humbly, and you share this message with you. But if they're not willing to hear it, leave. And don't just leave, but knock dirt off your feet too, so as to deliver the message that I don't even want to take your dirt with me. And you go, wow, that's not very friendly. Somebody might get offended at that. And the point that Jesus is trying to make to them is that you have something to stand for. You're not going based on your notions. You're going based on mine. And my notions are worth standing up for. My teaching is worth standing up for. My instruction is worth standing up for. And if people are willing to hear it, great, share it with them. But if they're not, you've got better things to do. And he told them after that, in verse 16, behold. Now, listen. He's saying, listen to me. Get what I'm about to tell you. I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Sheep in the midst of wolves. Well, what are sheep? Sheep are pure. They're peaceable. What does a sheep want? A sheep wants to hang out with the other sheep and eat grass. That's about the extent of it. Sheep don't want to go conquering. You've never heard about a herd of sheep come charging down out of the mountains and consume a village? Sheep are peaceable. But he says, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. In the midst of wolves. Well, what do? Wolves eat sheep. Wolves travel in packs, and they're smart, and they assess what the sheep are doing so as to take advantage of them. And they connive, and they work together, and they attack, and they consume. And Jesus says, I'm sending you out into that world. That's not a pretty picture. If you're trying to recruit people to your side, That's not really the message that I'd go with in this world, because if you're looking at things through these eyes, that's not going to draw a big crowd. But Jesus is asking them to see with their faith eyes, not their physical eyes, because if you see that message, what are you going to do? I'm going to run. I'm going to hide. I'm going to get away from the wolf because the wolves want to eat me. And just, Jesus says to them after that, therefore, because I'm sending you out as sheep amidst wolves, he says, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Why? So Jesus called wisdom into this. Be wise as serpents. Now, listen, how does a snake operate? Look, I don't like them. I don't like snakes. And so having to be associated or identified with a snake really just kind of makes my skin crawl. But when you understand how a snake operates, it makes a little more sense. Because snakes don't have great vision. But you know what they do? They employ every sense they have. They utilize every resource that's available to them to make their decisions. And Jesus is telling them to be wise as serpents. Look, I'm sending you out there into a dangerous world, in a world that wants to consume you. They don't like you for who you are. They want to eat you alive. You need to go out there and you need to utilize every resource available to you. You need to take advantage of not only your sight, but your smell and your feel. And you need to be able to assess a situation, because a snake will scope out a situation. He'll patiently look at it. He'll assess everything that's going on. And when the opportunity is right, he's on it. And you need to learn a lesson from the snake when you go out there into this world. You need to learn from them and how they operate. And you need to operate like that. But you still need to be harmless as doves. Because what was doves? Doves were a clean animal. Doves were worthy of a sacrifice before God. And so you go out there into that world, not looking at it through your eyes, but looking at it through your faith, knowing that it's me that's sending you, knowing that I understand these things. I'm telling you this ahead of time. And you look at this world with your faith eyes. And things are going to happen. Listen to what he says is going to happen. Again, not really the way to recruit people. He says, just as if to say, look, I need to really make you brutally aware of what I'm saying here. He says in verse 17, beware of men. Not talking about wolves, not talking about sheep, not talking about snakes, not talking about doves, talking about people. Beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in their synagogues. You'll be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. That's going to happen. When you go out there, sometimes you're going to get arrested. Sometimes you're going to take a beating from me. Sometimes you're going to be delivered up to kings. And you're going to have an opportunity to make your case in front of them. But I want you to skip down to verse 23 and listen to what he says to them there. He says, but when they persecute you in this, flee to another. And so the arrests and the scourging, the beatings aren't going to happen every time. In fact, Jesus is telling them that you've got to make good decisions. You see, he pulled wisdom back into this thing too. And we are talking about faith. And what is faith? Well, what we can see from this, what we can learn from this, is Jesus is telling them that you need to have a belief, not in something that you can see, but something that you know so profoundly to be true that it drives you into action. That's exactly what faith is. Faith is an evidence-based belief that drives us into action. And if that's what faith is, then wisdom is discerning the situation that's in front of us to give us the best route from where we are to where it is we're going, to where our faith is taking us. Jesus is telling them, I'm sending you out into a dangerous world. You go. You go out into that world and you stand for the truth. You call evil evil when it's the right when it's there. You call it what it is. And if they won't listen to you, leave. But sometimes that's going to result in your arrest. Sometimes the right thing to do is to take a beating for it. Sometimes the right thing to do is to get out of there and go to another city and try again. And the thing that determines that situation is wisdom. And so our faith and our wisdom are just innately coupled. They're just inherently coupled together, and we have to develop those things. Just like we have to develop faith, we have to develop wisdom. I want you to consider what Jesus says a little bit after this. In fact, right after he's talking to them about them being persecuted in this city and fleeing to another, he says in verse 24, a disciple is not above his teacher and a servant above his master. He said, you know why this is going to happen to you? It happened to me. You shouldn't expect more for yourselves than happened to me. I've been persecuted. I've been attacked. I've been run out of town. I've been ridiculed. I've been called names. They're plotting after me, seeking to kill me. Eventually, they're going to succeed. You're my disciples. You should be expecting the same. But he tells them, what I tell you in the dark, you speak in the light. And what you hear in the ear, preach on the housetops. And don't fear those who can kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who's able to destroy both soul and body in hell. He's telling them, you have faith. Because you're going to face, perhaps, some perilous times. You're going to face some difficult times. But there's something greater than that. You have faith. And you act on that faith as the situation calls for. You see in Jesus' walk on this earth, they didn't arrest him every time, did they? There were times when he was arrested when it was the appropriate time. But plenty of times before then, he slipped away from them. He slipped away from the Pharisees. Sometimes that's going to be the right situation. Sometimes it's not. If there's anybody that understood the peril of being a Christian almost as much as Jesus, that'd have to be the Apostle Paul. And when you think about what Paul went through in his life. I mean, if you consider in Acts 14 that Paul was stoned and left for dead, and within a day he was back preaching again, you begin to understand that Paul wasn't looking at this world through his physical, looking at this world through his faith eyes. Because anybody that would be looking through the world through their physical eyes would say, you know what, this is a terrible line of work. Can't imagine what my insurance premiums are going to do. This is not something that you can look at with your physical eyes. You have to learn to look at this world through your faith eyes and to walk forward through the fear, through the worry and the uncertainty, and stand for truth regardless. Paul delivered a very similar message to the Ephesians as Jesus did with his disciples in Ephesians 5. I want you to listen to what he said in Ephesians 5 and in verse 8. He's talking to the Ephesians there and he says, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the world." He didn't say you're reflecting light. He said you are light. You are light. How? In the Lord. You are light in the Lord. How can you be light? Faith. So you see, when you adopt and you take in the faith of our Lord, You give His light. And Paul says, you were once darkness, but now you are light. You are the only light this world has. You're the only light this world can see. Because people are not going to naturally and inherently go around looking for this. They don't know. And you have to be that light. He says, you are light. Walk as children of light. Have faith. Don't look at this world through your physical eyes. Look at this world through your faith eyes and act a child of God. And he tells them there that light exposes darkness. You can't have any part or parcel with darkness because light exposes darkness. And what, listen to what he says in verse 11. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. You know what Jesus said? Expose them. You call evil evil when it's evil. You expose the darkness. He says it's shameful to even speak of those things which were done by them in secret. But all things, listen, all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light. You know what that means, made manifest? It means made visible. It's made visible. Your light that you shine through your faith makes the evil in this world become apparent. Now let me ask you, how does the evil person react to being exposed? Typically not good. They typically don't go, wow, you know what? I never saw that. So I have an opportunity to become a better person. No, typically what they're going to do is lash out at you for exposing them for who they are, for exposing their true colors, so to speak. And you know what? That's okay. Because you're not walking through this world with your faith eye. You see, young people, it's okay to be light. It's okay to expose darkness. It may not get you a million followers on YouTube. It may not make you the most popular person on social media. In fact, it may restrict you to a handful of true friends. But what it does is it shows that you are shining the light of God in this world of darkness, and He's promised something far better than this world can offer to you. Expose them. Listen to what he says in verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly. Circumspectly. It's an interesting word. What does that mean? Well, you know what a circle is, circumference. It's round. Inspect is look, so look. When Paul says you're facing this world of darkness and you're exposing it, how do you do that? Careful. He says, not as fools. You don't do this as a fool. You do this as what? As wise. That's exactly what Jesus told his disciples. Look, it's a dangerous world out there. You be wise. You stand for the truth, but you be wise about it. Because if you come charging in there, like my grandma used to say, like a bull in the china shop, it may not go well. But he goes on and he says, walk circumspectly, not as fools, as wise. But he also says, redeeming the time. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. See, this is the problem that I think that a lot of us have faced. This is the problem that I've faced. Is I want to go, you know what? I know there's evil out there. I don't know how to deal with it. I'll sit there and look at it. I'll examine it for a while. I'll study it and see if I can make some sense out of it. And the days are just clicking by. Paul tells him, be circumspectly, not as fools as wise, but redeem the time. You've got to take advantage of the opportunity while you have it because the days are evil. And let me tell you what, they're not getting less evil. This world's getting more evil. I can tell you that in my lifetime, I have seen this world descend to a state that I never thought was possible as a young man. I never considered the possibility that my freedom would be at stake. And yet, that's not guaranteed anymore. And so, young people, your faith is going to be paramount in your lives. It is going to be the key factor that you need to hang on to and that you need to grow. Paul tells the Ephesians in verse 17, therefore, because you're light, because you're going to expose darkness, because you have to act in a way that's wise, yet redeeming the time, don't be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Understand what the will of the Lord is. Well, how do you understand something? How do you understand anything? Experience. With experience. You don't come to understand anything by just going, I think I got it. Downloaded it. Oh yeah, there it is. It comes with practice. It comes with dedication. It comes with commitment. It comes with determination to understand. Don't be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And there are going to be times in your life, young people, when you have no earthly idea. When you trust that the will of the Lord needs to be done, but you have no idea what your role in that is. And you know what you do? You pray. And you do the best that you can. And you be thankful that the grace of God is there for the times when you don't do it perfectly. And I am thankful and appreciative for that. Because in my life, I have been far from perfect. Let's go back to Acts 2 for a second. And let's think about them. Because I really want to pull this back together. I really want to pull this back to that idea of what's going on in Acts 2. Look at Acts 2, and let's just look at the last couple verses there. Because Jesus, at this point, has left the earth. And they're there doing the best they can in a world that is not friendly towards them. And in verse 46, now let's back up to verse 40. And many other words he testified and exhorted them, saying, be saved from this perverse generation. Then those who gladly received his word were baptized, and that day about 3,000 souls were added to them. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship and the breaking of bread and in prayers. And fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done through the apostles. Now all who believed, were together and had all things in common and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. Let me tell you something, young people, young Christians, your fellow Christians, people your age, people at your station of life who share your belief, are going to be your stronghold in this world. And you know why? Because despite your best efforts, you're going to fail sometimes. It's going to happen. And when you can be together like they were together, in each other, so I don't mean together here for a couple hours a week in a worship service, I mean together. Like they were together. And that's one of the ways I'm convinced that the devil has been successful with what? is, you know, I've got my friends at work, I got my friends at school, I got this thing that I do out here on the sports team, I got this thing, and it draws us apart from one another. I've got a life outside of here. They were together because you know why? They had to be together. You know why? Because that world was a bunch of wolves that wanted to eat them alive, and their survival depended on it. If your faith is going to survive, if your Christianity is going to survive, you need the people that are around you. And they are your best stronghold. And your best hope of serving God properly is going to come from the strength that you draw from God and your brothers and sisters. I want to ask you a frightening question. And this is something that kind of hit me one day. And it really kind of sent shivers down my spine. What do you base your faith on? What do you base it on? A lot of people would say this. That's a good answer. That's a good answer. What would you do? What would it do to your faith? Remember, faith is a belief that is so deep that it drives you into action, right? What would you do if you didn't have access to this anymore? That's a terrifying thought. But I can almost guarantee you the ones that would succeed because they would draw strength and remembrance from the other people that are around them. Because in this fight, none of us can do it alone. Never in my life has the church and the role of the church been more important than it is right now. And in a world where we're afraid to be around each other because of a disease that we can't really identify and articulate, and there's so much information and misinformation out there about it, it's hard. But we collectively are each other's best hope. And we need to drink this in while we have it, absorb it, because one day your only access to this may be through the mind of the person sitting next to you. And the people that are sitting around you. And in that case, you truly do become the world's Bible. If you're here and you've never considered your role personally, your personal individual role, I'd ask you to do that. Because while it is a collective unit, the collective is nothing without the individuals. Consider your role in being light, in sharing what you've been given. Because we're going out into a world of darkness. And we're to expose that light, but we're to be looking for that one little flicker of an ember in hopes that we can fan that thing into a full-blown fire. And it may be you, young person. It may be you that makes a difference in whether the gospel continues or dies completely. Is that a lot of pressure? Yeah. But we've been given a big job to do. We've been given a big job to do. And we do it individually and we do it collectively. So if you're here tonight and you've never given obedience to the gospel, there is not a better time than right this minute. Because we're not guaranteed anything else. We're not guaranteed another second. But we have right now. And if we begin our work right now, then there's hope. You're God's light. Walk as children of light. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come? Always stand and sing.